The rise of digital media has revolutionised how we consume information and influences every aspect of our day-to-day lives, including how we work, what we buy, and who we keep in touch with socially. Now, it's also firmly embedded in electoral politics and is the new battleground for how political parties target voters. With just a week to go now until the British general election, parties are increasingly targeting key demographics with bespoke messages, something that, if executed correctly, could cause big political shockwaves. For more, I am joined on the line by Finn McRedmond, digital writer and commentator with the Irish Times. And I'm also joined by Alistair Reid, digital editor of First Draft. That's a global verification and investigation network. Finn, I suppose it's true to say that no political party in a modern democracy could run an election without a social media campaign, but now it seems they have to be nimble enough to decide which social media platform to invest in that will give them the best return and the most hits.
Yeah, something that's emerging over the past decade probably is not just the use of social media, but understanding where your voters lie and what social media platforms they're using. So Facebook has always been quite a big part of social media political campaigns. We've kind of really first really saw it come into effect with Obama and his re-election campaign in 2012. But as the decade has gone on, we've seen the emergence of new digital platforms, the likes of Snapchat, Instagram. So possibly if your voter is a bit younger, they probably don't really spend a lot of their time on Facebook. They might actually spend a lot of their time on these platforms like Snapchat. So for Labour, who tend to have a younger voting base, they're spending a lot more money this election on Snapchat than the Conservatives, for example, who will probably be spending more of their money on Facebook, just by trying to target exactly where their voters lie.
And the idea here, I suppose, is that nobody really sits down anymore to read an election manifesto, if they ever did, or political coverage through the traditional media. Basically, the message has to be delivered to younger audiences in bite-sized chunks.
It's a kind of a simple messaging tool that it's a lot easier to digest one sentence image to make it more kind of captivating to the eye than having to read through pages and pages. And some of these manifestos are over 100 pages long, you know. So rather than sitting down and opening that up and spending an evening kind of trawling through it and seeing what you think about it, you can go on to whatever social media platform you're more likely to use. And you might see an advertisement from a political party just with one message on it. So in the Conservatives' case, you might be scrolling through Facebook and an ad will pop up and it'll be a photo of Boris Johnson and it will say, "Vote Conservative to get Brexit done." While you're not getting the same detail that you would get with reading a manifesto, you're getting their central message there and you're getting it almost passively.
Yes, and turning to you, Alistair Reid, digital editor of First Draft, the other side of this is the type of bespoke messaging that's being crafted to particular audiences. So just explain to us or remind us, what exactly is micro-targeting?
So micro-targeting is the ability for campaigners and online advertisers in general to be able to really pinpoint their target audience. With really fine detail. So normally, you know, previously you'd put an advert up on the TV or in a newspaper or on a billboard and you'd hope that people would see it who are relevant. Now on Facebook and on other platforms, you can say, "I want this advert to appear to people with these specific interests in this specific postcode." So you can really get down to those demographics, those constituencies, people with certain interests or fears, or know what's important to them by what particular Facebook pages they might like. And that's how micro-targeting works now.
Yeah, and your own organisation, First Draft, I gather it drills into the Facebook ad library so you can see exactly, or can you see exactly who and where a party is targeting its advertising?
Yes, so we've been doing a lot of research around how exactly a lot of the parties have been targeting their ads and using the ad library. They have an ad library which anyone can see. You need some extra coding skills, which my colleagues, not myself, have to be able to really get into the nitty-gritty and the detail of seeing what's there. But you can see the specific demographics of how these ads are being targeted. So you can look at people's age, you can look at whether, you know, their gender, and you can see what region they're living in. But it doesn't get any more detailed than that. Facebook doesn't let anyone else apart from themselves and the advertisers see how specific those ads are targeted. But what we can see, for example, as Finn was just saying, say the Conservatives promoting ads saying "get Brexit done," most of those ads are being targeted, the Brexit ones, are being targeted at older men. And that is what the ad library says. Older, you know, 55 plus, almost exclusively men, almost exclusively in England rather than Scotland or Wales, are being served these ads saying, get Brexit done. On the other hand, they've made some promises, some misleading promises, some promises which have been fact-checked and debunked about their plans for the NHS. And most of those ads are being served to women, again in England, but perhaps older and younger women. So they're deciding what they think certain demographics will, what messages will resonate with them more, and then serving the ads to them through Facebook.
And you're talking there about ads like the ones that push the idea of 40 new hospitals, 50,000 extra nurses, a claim as well that a Labour government will cost each home an extra £2,400 in tax. Now, all of those questionable offerings from the Tories, but the platforms like be they Facebook or others, they don't need to be verified for them, do they?
So that's correct. Yeah, all of those claims that you mentioned have been addressed by fact checkers and marked as misleading. But about a month ago or a month or two ago, Mark Zuckerberg, the Facebook founder, came out and said that his platform would not be putting fact checks on political adverts. And basically, what they've done at Facebook is, as well as opening up this ads transparency library, they brought in over the last couple of years, since the 2016 election of Donald Trump, they brought in fact checkers to be able to basically say, you know, when things are reported as being misleading on Facebook, those posts and those links and those memes or videos or whatever go in front of the third-party fact checkers, who then check them out. And then if people share them again on Facebook, there will be a little, this article, this post has been flagged as misleading for these reasons. That doesn't happen for ads.
Yeah, Finn, the Labour Party, for instance, has put several thousand pounds behind promoting its manifesto on Facebook, spending, well, OK, it's a lot more than the Tories have spent, but it's not a huge amount of money, £18,000 on three ads in the past week, collectively generating over 1 million impressions. That sounds like a pretty good bang for its buck.
Yeah, because I think a lot of the way that these advertisements can be valuable is not only do they just Labour just puts them on whatever social media platform, but then people see it and they might share it. They might like the message, so they might share it on their own social medias, you know, or they might take a screenshot of it and put it on Twitter. So I think it's quite hard to quantify, actually, the kind of reach that it has in that way.
And another question for you, Finn. Can you explain to us or tell us about a method referred to in highly technical language as shitposting?
So this is a kind of a new thing that we're seeing in this electoral cycle. It's kind of the use of memes. So usually just static images with some text overlaid on top of it. That is kind of intentionally low quality. Perhaps it's making a bad joke or a reference to a popular film franchise. And it's put on these social media sites as an advertisement. So that's come paid for by the Conservative Party. But it almost looks like it's the sort of thing that any person with access to Microsoft Paint could generate themselves in 20 minutes on their laptop in the evening.
Right.
So we saw this in the Australian election a few years back with these two young chaps called Sean Topham and Ben Guerin. And that tactic was largely credited with the kind of surprising victory of the centre-right coalition in Australia. So that tactic has been kind of transported and adopted by the Conservative Party. And it has two major values to it. The first one is it takes a long time to make a really flashy, nice political graphic. It takes an even longer time to make a really well-produced video. But when it comes to these memes, referred to as shitposting, you can make 20 in an hour. And it's a way for you to just be able to flood your social media advertising campaign with as much stuff as possible.
In fact, an example of that, or a variation of that, Boris Johnson mocked earlier in the campaign after releasing a Vogue-style question and answer video. Vogue frequently does its 73-question videos with A-list celebrities, but the Boris version was seen as a low-effort copycat version designed to provoke reaction. Let's have a listen to an extract.
Hey, Boris, you all right?
I'm good. How are you?
What's been on your mind today? Well, I can't hide it from you. I've been thinking a bit about this general election campaign.
And how do you typically start your day?
I tend to get up pretty early, and then I go down and take the dog for a walk, and dog does his business, and so on and so forth. That's my start to the day.
And what's the most surprising thing you found about being PM?
I was pretty incredulous the other day when I found out I couldn't actually get a Thai curry delivered to number 10 because of the security problems.
And coming back to you, Alistair Reid, it's certainly anybody who's seen it would say it certainly didn't cost a lot to make or take a lot of time. But is that something that would be seen as successful from a Tory point of view?
Well, I think there are a couple of things going on there. That interview that you just mentioned, some of the other things that they've been putting out aren't looking at the specific policies, and they're going much more on personalities. They're going much more on who Boris is, who Boris Johnson is, what he likes, what he can do, and pushing that angle of the how the electorate should relate to him or the Conservatives rather than talking about specific policies. And I think a big part of what Finn was just saying around these kind of low-quality images and posts as well is that when they are really low-quality, there was one which was Comic Sans, and people share them and joke about them and say, look at this, this is ridiculous, when they're almost like incredulously bad. But people still share them, and they're sharing them, and it's getting it out there. The old adage that, you know, there's no any publicity is good publicity, even when it might be being shared negatively, that still means that the Conservatives' message is getting out there and being shared. And this is, we should remember, exactly as Finn said, that Ben Topham and the Topham and Geraghty, those two guys who helped out in the Australian election, have now been employed by the Conservatives to work on this one, to do this kind of work. And they've also got Dominic Cummings, who masterminded the Vote Leave election and advertising campaign, which included ads in the last week, like a big red arrow pointing from the Middle East to the UK to stir up fears about immigration.
They have another week to do more of this stuff. Look, we leave it there for now. My thanks to you both. Alistair Reid, digital editor of First Draft, and my thanks as well to Finn McRedmond, digital writer and commentator with the Irish Times.